Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast, supported by Precision Hydration. If you're looking for an in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking, then this is the place to be. Hydration impacts how you feel and how you perform. Fact. We all know that we need to consume fluids when we ride, but it's not as simple as just drinking a load of water. We all sweat at different rates and we lose different amounts of salts with that sweat, so it's very easy to be under or overhydrated. Precision Hydration are on a mission to make it easy to stay hydrated and perform at your best. They have a full range of variable strength electrolytes and either an in-person sweat test or a free online questionnaire to help you get your tailored hydration plan sorted. I've put a link to the free online questionnaire in the show notes for this episode, so head to that to get your free plan. I've been using the products for a while now and I'm in good company with riders like Bex Barahona and Tracy Mosley, also on the Precision Hydration plan. I found that by using the right strength electrolytes with the right amount of fluid, I've been able to feel much brighter in general, especially after long, hard rides when I'd normally feel pretty wiped out. I've not had the light headaches that I sometimes get in the afternoons after training, and I even used them at Eurobike last week to make sure that I stayed well hydrated during long days at the show. To get your free hydration plan, visit precisionhydration.com and fill out their online questionnaire or book yourself in for an in-person sweat test. If you want to use their range of top quality electrolytes, then as a Downtime listener, you get 20% off using the code DOWNTIME, all in capitals at the checkout. This podcast still relies on your support. You can do that by leaving us a review, telling your friends about the show, following us on social media at Downtime Podcast, or grabbing yourself something from our web store at downtimepodcast.com/shop, where we've got t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies and mugs, all super high quality, ethically sourced, and with free worldwide shipping on orders over £30. Thanks to everyone who supported us this far. It really does make a difference, and we really appreciate your support. To get all the episodes delivered straight to you, the best thing to do is to subscribe. We've got a page on our website to help you do that, downtimepodcast.com/subscribe. There, you'll also find a form to fill in to join our fast-growing newsletter, which will help you keep up to date with all the podcast news, listener offers, and more. This week, I'm joined by one of Enduro's rising stars, Matt Stothard. After a huge crash in 2017, where he was told he may never ride a bike again, Matt has worked his way back up the field with a solid 2019 season so far. He's currently ranked 17th in the overall, even though he's racing as a privateer. We sat down to find out more about Matt's story and just what it takes to break through in World Enduro. So, without further ado, here's Matt Stothard. Matt Stothard, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. How's it going?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks, mate. So, set the scene for the listeners. Where are we?
We've just done a spin at Leeds Urban Bike Park. It's pretty local to both of us. So, yeah, we're currently sat in my van. We did get a room, but it was pretty echoey. So, we're currently sat in my van, just chilling out, looking at the views.
Nice. Yeah, it's pretty good, Leeds Urban Bike Park, eh?
Yeah, like I say, it's local to both of us and there's so much progression for everyone, like top riders and absolute beginners.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of everything for everyone, and I enjoy coming over here.
Yeah, good variety of stuff for sure. Mm. Cool. Well, let's wind back the clock then. We'll start from the beginning for you. Tell us a little bit about how mountain biking came into your life, how you got into it in the first place.
Well, I've always been into bikes and motorbikes. From a young age, like my dad used to race superbikes, like against Neil Hodgson and Carl Fogarty and them guys. But then from a young age, I rode bikes just around the local area. And then we actually do quite a lot of skiing in the winter. We went to Les Deux Alpes one summer and skied on the glacier. And we seen everyone in the afternoon riding downhill bikes. So we're like, that looks pretty good. We'll have a do at that. So literally rented some bikes and had some big crashes, me, my brothers and my dad. It just led from there. Come home, I bought a Corner Stinky.
Nice.
Like the standard bike, what everyone starts off on. It started from there. I think that was coming up to 10 years ago now. So
fair play. So how old would you have been when you started then?
I think I was 16 when I bought my Corner Stinky.
Okay.
So literally just leaving high school.
Yeah.
I went to college doing a plumbing degree. So that's when I first started racing, when I was junior, like in the downhill side of things.
So. Yeah. Yeah, so it was downhill from the start then, really. That's what got you in.
Yeah. Yeah, we started just doing that at British Nationals. My first British National, like in when a serious national was the full Llangollen Woods track.
Oh, the steep one.
So yeah, it was a bit of an eye opener for sure. And like,
how long had you been riding downhill at that point?
I think a year.
Okay.
Yeah, I did my very first race with Farmer John's, which is again like Manchester, so it's quite local to us. And like the night race, I won that. Like my very first race, I'm a corner stinker.
Fair play.
No goggles or anything. Full squid mode. But yeah, like we started there, me and my brother, and my dad used to race as well. And we just got into nationals and Pierce rounds and borderline events and stuff. And
yeah.
Just kept building up from there and went into the downhills. I think we started, my first World Cup was 2012, I think.
Okay.
We had a bit of a hard time trying to qualify because we had to qualify in elites when we were a junior.
Yes,
okay. It was still them days, so it was tough, very tough to get in there. And like my junior category was like Troy Brosnan and all the lads like,
yeah, that was a strong field back then, wasn't it? I guess like Loris and people like that.
It was pretty hard. So yeah, like it started off with that. And
sweet. What was it like turning up? Was it Le Breste was your first World Cup?
I think it might have been Fort William.
Okay.
I think, I'm not sure. It was pretty nerve-wracking. I actually went and watched, I think it was a year before or 2 years before. And like, I absolutely loved it. And I was like, I want to race here one day. I want to do some World Cups like one day. And then I think it were actually the year after I got like called up for the British jersey. And I'm like, I was so excited. And then when I got there, like, I was quite nervous, but I tend to deal with pressure quite well.
Okay.
And I remember like lining up for my qualifying run and I could literally just hear like the crowds even like in the arena at the bottom. And I was just like, this is absolutely mental. Like, what am I doing here? I've only been riding for like 2 years. But and then like I got into a run and I like, absolutely loved it. Like I caught, I'll never forget it. I caught a Swedish lad up coming onto the motorway section and like he was literally just all over the track. I couldn't get past him and I didn't qualify by, I think it was 1.5 to 2 seconds.
Oh man.
And I absolutely devastated. Like I like pretty much in tears.
Yeah, I bet.
But like it, I managed to get a call up for a couple more jerseys for the couple of more rounds. And I think the very first one I qualified at was Hafjell.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe 2013. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And like from there on, I actually had a crash in my qualifying run. So I was like, oh, I've never qualified. And I got down and I had quite a good run. And I was like, oh my God. And like from there, I was like so happy with everything. And like just built on from there.
Yeah. So. And that was all as a privateer at this point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much from my whole career has been a privateer pretty much until we signed with Hope later on. But yeah, pretty much it's just been me and my brother and my dad when he used to race like the British Nationals as well as like a grand veteran. So it was good. Like, we got to a point where I think my brother may have just finished racing because he had quite a lot of big injuries like shoulders and wrists and dislocations and stuff. So he kind of pulled out a race and just rode for fun and got to a point now where I think our expert national champ in both downhill and enduro, and my dad was the same in Grand Vets.
Awesome.
So like we had quite a good couple of years me and my dad going at it. So
nice. So it must be fun going racing together as well.
Yeah, like the family side of things, it's always been real good. Like my brother was like so quick from the word go, like I'd just follow him in practice and he'd just be like gone. Like he's always been like the quickest one out of us. And then like he'd either win the race outright, like beat everyone, or he'd like absolutely muller himself.
Yeah, do or die. But,
yeah, like, and I think it just caught up to him after a couple of years and like unfortunately he just got fed up of crashing or like I've on the verge of crashing. So
yeah, that's fair enough. It takes its toll, doesn't it, if you ride like that all the time.
I remember one year at Val di Sol we both got jerseys for the World Cup for GB and like following him in practice and he was just so like keep up with him for like three corners and he'd just be gone and I was just like, oh my god, how, like he's so quick. And then I think it was last practice run before qualifying and he come down and like one of the corners near the top and just crashed broke his scaphoid.
Oh, nasty. Yeah.
And I think I qualified that year, so like I think I was like maybe around 50th or something in qualifying. So if he'd like, he'd have definitely gone so much quicker than me.
Yeah.
Like, it's mental.
Fair play. What do you think, where's that difference in approach come from between the two of you? Like, he's kind of all in, roll the dice, you're a bit more calculated.
Yeah, I think, I'm not really sure, like we're both kind of similar on a bike, but he's just got so raw speed, it's like some sections just like, what are you doing, like you're absolutely nuts. But I think I kind of have more of a head on me where if I know it's a dangerous or a dodgy section, I'd just take a bit back so I know I'm going to get through it.
Right.
And then like push on the stuff what I know I'm either confident or it's an easy section, like I really push really hard on them sections.
Yeah.
So like I think it works both ways, like it just depends on how you ride and what type of riding style you are.
Yeah, so. Fair play. And you mentioned that you're kind of quite good at dealing with pressure.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Are there certain things that you do that help with that, or is it just a natural?
I'm not really sure. I think it just comes natural to different people. Like, I know quite a lot of people who I race with now are like, they just can't deal with pressure at all. Whereas like, I don't really put much pressure on myself. I just, most of the time, I just ride for, like, if I'm having fun, I'll ride good and confident anyway. So,
yeah.
I think it's just on, like, the mental side of yourself anyways. Pressure, if you put pressure on yourself, I think you tend to make more mistakes anyway, so.
Yeah. So is it not, that's not something you've really had to work at? It's just always been pretty chilled about stuff.
Yeah. Like I say, I've always seemed to deal with it quite well, so it,
yeah.
I've never put the pressure on myself. If I'm having fun, I'll tend to do better than I would anyway, so.
Yeah, fair play. So the downhill side of things was going pretty well. You've had a few kind of top 40s. You were, you know, qualifying regularly at World Cups, which is no mean feat.
Mm.
And then EWS started. I think, did you do the first one, Punta Ala?
Yeah, I did the very first EWS, which was a shock to the system. when I went downhill and didn't used to really train, I used to go to the gym and stuff, but that was it. Like, around where we are, like, Northwest isn't nothing to ride your downhill bike on, so I literally just went out, rode my trail bike on a few little like trails, like the longest trails I've got around here are a minute and a half, 2 minutes long, so
right.
There's nothing really to go hard on. So yeah, it's just
bit of an eye opener rocking up on that.
I got
start
to the
line.
EWS and I was like, what is this? Well, like the very first one, it was strange that like, I remember the GT voice, so like Dan Afton, Martin Mays was on the GT then as well. Like he was a really young kid then.
Yeah.
And like they'd been out there for like 3 weeks, I think, before. And they were like, when I arrived, like they were just getting towed up by a motocross bike. So like, they were just doing laps and laps. And like I was pedaling away, like dying. And like they just knew like every trail. And I was just like, oh, this is so unfair. Like I'm not doing one of these again. And then I actually did the same year. I did one in Les Deux Alpes, I think it was.
Yeah, second round. Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't really have like a proper enduro bike as such. I said like a trail bike, which was, it had Fox 32s on it. And
right, okay.
So it weren't really up to the mark of the trails. Yeah. And I think I actually raced the Les Deux Alpes on my downhill bike. I put a dropper post on it and stuff.
Fair play.
Yeah. That was actually such a good race. I hope they go back there one year. Like that were like, so some real big downhill trails, and then you know, I remember one stage it had a massive uphill in it.
Right.
And that on the downhill back, I pretty much blacked out. Like, I was going up it. Apparently my brother and my dad were running at the side of me shouting at me. I do not recall it at all. And then like, I think I got like 140th on that stage. And then all the other stages I were like top 25, top 20.
Fair play.
It was good.
Yeah. So did
that was literally just for fun back then, like just to break up. Like we're out in the Alps, so
we
thought we'll enter them.
Yeah, because your focus was very much downhill at that point. Yeah. But did that kind of ignite a bit of a fire for enduro at that point, or were you still kind of like fully focused on the downhill side?
Yeah, we've literally just flat out on the downhill side, like try to make it in that side of stuff. My dad kind of, that's when he kind of stopped racing the downhill and started doing the enduro side of stuff. He dabbled at both, but I was still so focused on the down, that's all I wanted to do.
Yeah. So yeah, you cracked on 2014, 2015.
Yeah.
Full seasons of the downhill side of things.
And 2015, I think that's when I started doing a handful of the British enduros. Yeah. And I think it was the last round, it was last year when Steve Parr had the UK gravities.
Yeah.
And I think the last round that they classed it is like the British Championship. And I actually went and won it. Like that was like, I think that was the first enduro, like British enduro that year maybe. You know, when I won it, and I was like, oh, this is actually pretty good. And I really enjoyed it. It's such a good race.
Were you fitter at that point? Had you been doing more training? And
One of the lads who we used to race with, like to start off with a downhill, he's actually my PT now.
Okay.
He's like a good friend of mine. His sister is like a CrossFit coach, like PT, and she's she does all the CrossFit games and stuff, so she kind of trained us a bit back then. And kind of got my head around like the training side of things, and actually put a bit of work in like the later years of downhill,
right?
And like it kind of showed that it did help, like my results went a lot higher and like a lot more consistent and stuff. It was an eye-opener.
Yeah, so the enduro started to feel a little bit less less strenuous at that point.
Definitely.
So was it that success in the British series that drove you kind of back towards the enduro side?
I think so, yeah. Like obviously I went straight into it and like won a couple of first races, and I guess it's kind of the same with like when I first started down, and like just going off like a good streak from the start, it kind of puts a fire in your belly and you're just like, oh, it's actually pretty good. And then from there, just like you get a lot more bike time and a lot more for your money, like as a privateer going to the downhills. It's sort of like not fun, but like you put a lot of pressure on yourself to qualify, because like you spent so much money. Like say you've gone to Monson and you spent so much money to get there, you get a couple of runs in practice, and then qualifying day you get two runs in the morning.
Yeah.
And you got a few hours off your bike until your qualifying run. And if you have one mistake in qualifying run, usually you're on the verge of not qualifying. So like it's almost your race run is your qualifying run. And then if you qualify, you're so much more relaxed. So it's like, it was really tough, but like, whereas like the enduro side of things now, it's like when 2016, when I first did my EWS year as a privateer, like we realized that you go to so many different new places, and like obviously we paid to get there, but like you'd be out on your bike for like 6-7 hours every day, like for four days over the weekend.
Yeah.
And like every trail is like so good.
And you definitely get to race.
Yeah, that's it. Like you go there, you have 2 days practice and 2 days race at most of them. So
yeah.
Like you're always race. There's no qualifying as such. You just qualify to get into the events now. So
2016, that was the first year you went full onto the EWS side of things, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So was that was a decision then to kind of leave downhill behind? And
pretty much, yeah. I still, like that year, I still had my points in the UCI downhill, so I kept my downhill back from the year before, and just pretty much turned my focus onto enduro, and put quite a lot of training in. We actually had quite a good year. I entered two down, maybe Fort William and Lenzhard that year, just to break up the season and keep my points in the downhill just for the next year. That's when I kind of changed my focus onto it and just enjoyed it so much more and got a lot more for my money.
Yeah.
And like ever since I hadn't turned back once, like I wish I did it sooner.
Fair play. What did you learn in that first season then? Because it must be a big kind of adjustment, a lot to learn when you first go full into EWS.
Yeah, like, well, I'm still learning now, to be honest. Like, every race is a learning curve. But, like, the first one we did, I think it was Chile, a place called Coral. And, like, you couldn't stay, like, you had to get a little ferry, like a little boat to the race venue. Like, you weren't allowed to stay at the race venue. You had to stay over this, like, big lake. So like we were there and we're just like, where the heck are we? There's no internet, no mobile signal. You're just like, where are we? This place is mental, but like the trails are so much longer. And like, especially nowadays, the trails are so much more gnarly. You're like, some of the enduro tracks are like, they vary from like 4 minutes to 22 minutes. So it's just like, and they're pretty much full on downhill trails with a couple of sprints in them. So like you just, to try and learn a trail, like back then in 2016, you could do, there were no like rules about training. So you could do quite a few runs if you had the fitness, obviously, to get back up there. Or if you had ski lifts, you could lap it out quite a few times.
But,
like you could kind of learn the trails a bit more. And like, I always use a GoPro. So like after practice, I'll put my GoPros on my phone and like, edit them all together. So like when I go up to race, I watch the GoPro lap before.
Okay.
So it's fresh in my mind. I've done that with downhill from the start anyway. So that's, I kind of brought that over. But
do you find that, I mean, obviously it helps, but for a 22 minute stage, even if you sit and watch the stage at the top, you're not going to remember a lot.
No, you'll never remember it all. Especially nowadays, you can only get one practice run. So
what are you looking at when you go back to that video?
It's pretty much just to try and pinpoint like the bad sections as such, like the real rough, hard sections. Like I kind of, I'm never going to walk a 22 minute stage because it takes like a day.
Yeah.
But like, I'll walk a few sections, like maybe a bottom section, or if someone says it's a bad section, I'll walk it. But like in practice, I'll just go down and I'll try and go similar to race speed, but obviously you're riding it blind. So you kind of got to hold back. That's why I do the GoPros in one factor, but it's just when you're in practice, you kind of get a feel of how it's going to ride and like you pinpoint the bad sections. So like, I talk to myself on my GoPro, like I'll either be like, go wide there, go jump over these sections, or that were a bit dodgy, maybe look at that.
You're kind of creating almost pace notes as you're doing it.
So and then when I watch it back, I know to go high in a section or like jump over these routes or go quicker in this section, go slower in this section. So it's just trying to make it easier for yourself. And like you say, you're never going to know the whole track. So it's just, for me, like just try and pinpoint certain sections what are either dodgy, just to make sure you get through that section clean, so your bike or your body survives it as such. It's just try and make it easy for yourself. And
fair play. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So it was going pretty good, right? 2017 season, you had a solid start, 15th place in Tasmania.
Which was
pretty horrific. Challenging the conditions.
Like, well, we raced New Zealand the weekend before, and that was
a really wet one.
Like, it was absolutely brutal. I bent my chainring on like the pedaliest stage. We had a minute and a half fire road sprint, and Jared Graves was chasing me down there as well. And I think like three people overtook me on the fire road, and I got to the bottom, and I was like, "What can I do with this?" So I found a wooden stake and like bent it back. And I managed to, I had to sprint all the way up the next transition to make my start time for the next one. So I think I finished like 40th there. So like I knew I was going well. So like I come into Tasmania pretty confident, and all the trails were relatively short. They were kind of like downhill stages, and it was like really rough, big rocks and pretty burly tracks. So like I was quite confident in practice, and then like it absolutely like poured down for racing. Like it was so dry in practice, and then like for racing, it was the complete opposite. It was mental. Like you couldn't wear goggles because you just like it just gets either fogged up or like they were just full of water.
Yeah.
So it was just goggleless race from the start, from the word go. As soon as you set off out the start, like you were just drenched. It was like torrential rain, and like it kind of, for me, it made the trails better. Like it's kind of like granite and like loose soil sand.
Yeah.
So like I ride a lot of motocross, so around us it's kind of the similar ground, and in the wet it's always grippier.
Yeah.
So I kind of knew that it was going to be the same, so I just attacked it almost more than it was when it was dusty, and it kind of worked for me. And like we got a couple of good stages. I think like maybe I had a fourth or a fifth on a stage, and I just knew I could push really hard, and I think I finished 15th in the end. So
yeah, happy days.
That was like my best result to the date. And then we went on to Madeira.
Yeah, then carrying good momentum into Madeira, and that was the year it was super pretty wet and greasy out there. Yeah,
yeah. Some of the trails were, well, they were dangerous. Like
yeah, like riding on ice.
Yeah, it was so scary. Like, I'd actually been out to Madeira earlier on in the year. Like, we just did a, like, pretty much rode with free ride Madeira around some of the trails, and we're like, this place is unreal. Like, it's so good. And then we got there for racing, and we were just like, this is actually scary. Like, some of the sections were so brutal, and like, there's just like a layer of grease on some of the rocks, and it's like, just like ice out there. Like, when it gets wet, it was so scary. And we come down to one section, and we had a pretty big crash.
Yeah, talk us through it.
So we come into one section. I actually rode it, and they were like, I definitely could go through it a lot quicker. Like, it looked real rough from the top, but like I say, I rode it, and they're like, nah, it's not, we could go quicker. So I pushed back up, and I rolled in to go in again, and someone had just crashed in front of me. So I stopped, and turns out he'd separated his shoulder. So he was like sat on the side of the track with a medic, and then so I pushed back up to do it again.
Yeah.
They were coming like just flat out. Come through all the section, you're absolutely fine, like at the speed where I hit it, and there was just like a loose rock on, like, it was like three big steps, quite long, like the whole section was probably like 50 foot long, and you come into like a big berm, a quite steep section as well, and just hit like a loose stone on one of the, I think it was the second step, and it just like kicked me sideways a bit and like bucked my back wheel, and I flew, like missed the last step, like flew like probably 30 foot, flipping over handlebars, and just landed clean on like the top of the berm at the bottom.
Oh man, like the worst place to land.
Like, it just stopped me dead, and like I landed on my back, and my hip like literally dislocated and broke through the back of the hip socket. So like completely shattered my, like the back of my hip socket.
Yeah.
So all my pelvis were like in quite a few pieces. And I was just led like in the berm. And I remember like Sven Martin was stood there taking photos, and Nico were doing the video. And they helped quite a lot. Like I led there. Like, I think the adrenaline kind of took over. It didn't really, it weren't painful. Like, I was winded so bad.
Yeah.
Like, I could not breathe, and I actually thought I'd done something to my back, like, because I felt something click and click again, so I felt like I'd brought my back, but like I could move my legs and stuff, so like I was saying to Sven, I've done something to my back, like my back, and like I was led there for a while, and like once I could breathe again, like I was just like checking over my body as such, like, just moving everything, I could feel everything, I could move everything, but like, I would just drag myself off the track, and then we come like, open the track back up, because there was another track right close. So, and they were like, no, you need to stay there. So I led there for like 20 minutes. And like, to be honest, it didn't give me any pain. I think because it had dislocated and it had gone back in, luckily.
Right.
It didn't really give me much pain, and that like, the adrenaline were obviously kicking in. So I led there. It was just a bit uncomfortable, like the way I led in the berm. So I just like, KJ and all the other Hope Lock come over, and a few other riders, and they just put like rested something underneath my legs, so like it took the pressure off, and I was just led in. It was absolutely fine. Like it was almost like I was just led on the track, like just what you're doing. But yeah, they come along, and then medics got there, put me in a stretcher, and took me down to the hospital, which was quite a, like we were pretty much at the top of the mountain there, so quite a long drive down.
Yeah.
Got into like the main hospital in Funchal, I think it was, and they just left me in a corridor there. It was a pretty grubby hospital as well. It weren't the most pleasant of places. So I went in, had some scans, some x-rays. They couldn't see anything. They're like, oh, we'll get you in for some more scans later. So I think I was led in. I did it at pretty much bang on 12 o'clock in noon. And it got to midnight, like no painkillers or anything.
Oh man.
Just led on a rock solid spine board in my kit. And I was just like, oh, what is my life? Like, what am I doing? And we got later on, and I had some more CT scans. You're like, no, we can't I can't see anything. Oh no, if we had some more x-rays, and they're like, no, I can't see anything. We'll keep you in overnight. We'll release you tomorrow. Like, just on some crutches. So I'm like, oh, thank God, I've not brought my back. I've not done anything to my hip. Like, thank God
all
for
good,
that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we're all good. And then in the morning, they come back and they're like, we've had a specialist look over and you may have done something to your pelvis. So I was like, oh, right. Like, yeah, like, we'll have some CT scans if we can. So we got some more CT scans and like, yeah, you've brought your pelvis. So I was like, that's season over.
Yeah.
So we stayed in, I got moved from there to a private hospital. That was actually really nice. I had my own room there and stuff. So they were down at World Cup and I'm not sure where it were. And that was actually on the TV there. So
sweet.
That was the benefit of that hospital and they looked after me quite well there.
Yeah.
I had my own room. But I was waiting for a room in Preston Hospital back
right.
at home. So they couldn't get a room for like a week. So I was in Madeira Hospital for a week. And then finally got a room in Preston. So I got a private jet home with like two private doctors and
wow.
two pilots. And my mum come on the private jet with
yeah.
me. Like I was in like, you know, pretty much like a body bag.
Oh,
like a vacuum packed body bag. Flew home. Straight on an ambulance on the runway at Manchester.
Wow.
Straight to Preston for a week, doing some more scans and stuff. You're actually there where I didn't, like, by this point, still didn't know how bad it was. You're actually there when I've seen a specialist and he actually said, like, I can't guarantee you'll ever walk again. So, like, obviously, no one wants to hear that.
No, man.
So I was just, like, my mum come in and she was just like, just do whatever you can and like, we'll see after your operation. Like, we'll see how good you come out. So, like, it was quite a bad time.
Yeah.
I moved to Wrightington after 2 weeks. And that's where I had my operation. Like, they specialise in hips and
yeah.
like, shoulders there. So.
So this is already like 3 weeks after the crash, right?
Yeah, I think it was bang on 3 weeks after I had my operation.
Yeah.
So pretty much they cut my left glute, so like all my left arse cheek, pretty much just cleaning off. Went in 10 pins and 2 plates. I told hold it together. And he said, like, it's gone as well it is. We'll just see how you recover. And, like, looks like you will walk again, but you may never ride a bike. So
which,
like,
again, is not what
yeah,
you want to hear, right?
Like, we'll make the best of what we've got.
Yeah.
So I had to have an epidural for my operation because straight after the operation, they wanted me in, like, this machine what got all, like, the fluid and all the movement back into my hip straight away. And he said, like, if you don't have the epidural, you'll literally just pass out with a pain.
Wow.
So now, like, look, if it's going to help, then just do it. So I had my epidural. When I woke up, I was pretty dazed. Didn't know what was going on.
So you're paralyzed from the waist down by the
yeah.
epidural.
Yeah.
In some machine that's like, is it moving your leg?
Yeah, which is like, yeah, in the whole time of the 3 weeks, I couldn't sit up because of, like, the pressure and the hip would have just dislocated through the hip socket before my operation. So I literally could just like move up like a couple of degrees on my bed and that's all the movement. Like, I couldn't go to the toilet or anything.
Wow.
Like, I literally had to go like in my bed, like
in a bedpan
or the ones what you're weeing.
Yeah.
So straight after my operation, my leg was, when I woke up, it was in this machine and like it like lifted my leg up and bent it
right
like, to a sitting position.
Yeah.
And then it would go straight and that it was just constant, like for I think 3 or 4 days.
Oh,
just led in bed doing that.
Yeah. So are they keeping the epidural going at this
yeah,
point?
Yeah, like that epidural were in for a week, I think it was,
yeah.
after my operation. So yeah, like they just got all the fluid back into my hip. All the movement come back. Obviously I couldn't feel all this, so
mm-hmm.
and then they took the epidural out and then like over, I think it was like a day or 2 days, I started getting feeling back in my legs, which were nice.
Yeah, knowing that it works.
Yeah,
like.
And then like my left leg weren't as much feeling. Like I didn't have any feeling from like my calf down. So like myself, obviously, I was quite wary, and the doctors were a bit like uncertain of it. And then like a couple of days after it come to, so like they were happy with it, and then literally said, right, Nick, tomorrow you're getting on crutches.
Yeah.
So like they put me on some crutches, did like made sure I could walk on my crutches and get up a couple of flight steps. And it's like, right, you're ahead of what we think, so you're we'll release you tomorrow. So
fair play. You're in much pain at that point?
No, like in all honesty, from when I did it, it's not giving me any grief at all. Like unless I do like a big training ride or like something really strenuous and I sit down afterwards for a couple of hours, it'll be stiff.
Yeah.
But like once I've done a couple of steps, it all releases and it's absolutely fine again.
Yeah.
But like pain wise, it's not giving me any pain at all.
That's amazing.
Like, yeah, I can't thank the doctors enough. Like, they've done such a good job.
And all the metal work's still in there.
Yeah, that'll stay in for good, I think. Like it, a bit of a souvenir for me. So
nice.
Yeah.
So what was the recovery like from that? Because that's a pretty invasive operation, cutting through your glute and.
Yeah. So like. Well, pretty much just a life-changing like surgery. I'll be honest, it's still not the same. Like, doctor did say it were going to be like 3 to 4 years until you get your full strength back. So it's been just over 2 years now. Yeah. I do know it's nowhere near as strong as it was on my other leg. I actually did physio for a couple of weeks. I actually seen the physio twice, and they're like, you're just way ahead of what we are, so we'll release you. Like, you don't need any more physio from us. You're obviously doing more than what we can give you anyway.
Okay, so this is on the National Health Service.
Yeah. So like I did that, and like my mum knows quite a few people, and she's got like a masseuse, and actually she goes to Zumba and Pilates and stuff, so she helped me out quite a lot with that, like just doing different Pilates and stuff, just trying to get full movement back in it.
Yeah,
because obviously it was pretty stiff after all what went on. Two and a half years down the line now, and I've got pretty much all my movement back. My hip flexor's still pretty tight. I do notice that, but like we're still working on it, and I know the strength's not as strong, but it's definitely getting somewhere about, and like it's only going to get stronger. So
yeah,
like making do with what we've got, and it seemed to have worked out for me. So
does it hold you back at all in like training and stuff, like squatting or anything like that? Can you feel the difference kind of side to side? Or
I did to start with, like I said before, my PT now, Curtis, who we used to race with, he come on board like 2 years ago when I first signed with Hope. So like I went to see him pretty much every week, and he noticed that my left glute weren't firing, obviously because it had been cut in half, so there was pretty much no muscle there, and yet all my left leg was so skinny, like it was literally like my forearm. So I was just thinking, like, how am I going to build this up? So we did a lot of single leg stuff, like with squats. I obviously do a lot less weight because I couldn't, like, it all just go through my right leg, so we didn't really focus on that to start with. We just did a lot of single leg stuff just to try and start building that muscle up and get the muscle memory back.
Yeah.
And we had to do like quite a lot of like glute exercise just to try and get the glute firing, and it actually only started firing like mid-season last year. Like it pretty much took like a full year for my glute to start firing again.
That's mad. That's a big muscle for riding.
It's like one of the main muscles, like your glute, your hamstring was so tight.
Yeah.
Like glutes, hamstrings, calves and your thigh, obviously the main ones for us.
Yeah.
And all them was like so weak. Like it pretty much halfway through last year, the only started working them pretty much. So
that's mad. So do you have to do much kind of ongoing maintenance with it? Like you said that like hip flexors are tight and stuff. Is there like foam rolling or anything that you do that helps keep you moving?
Yeah, like I've always done foam rolling back at home and like races. So like that was just a standard for me anyway. Mainly for the injury, it was foam rolling my hamstring because that was so tight from being led up in bed for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And then obviously on crutches for a couple of months after that, so I couldn't, like, it was literally like my leg was almost like bent at a little angle. So like my hamstring kind of just formed in that position, and when I actually stretched it out, it was so painful. So like foam rolled that and like started loosening up. But it was just like the only thing what's still tight is my hip flexor. But like to try and, you kind of got to like hyperextend your hip like the opposite way, so yeah. Push your hips forward and like almost stretch your back really far back to try and just to stretch it as such, and like just step by step and just getting better and better. Like it's still nowhere near as flexible as my right hip, but uh-huh. It's definitely got a lot better since like from when we started doing them. So it's just a matter of time. Like injuries, even just little injuries, take time. It's,
yeah, for sure.
This one's going to take a couple of years. So.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously, it took you out for the rest of the 2017 season, but then you were back at it for. I think you got to the first round of the 2018.
Yeah,
season,
I actually went. Well, 2017, I actually went to finale.
Okay.
I rode practice with Dano and Catherine.
Yeah.
From Hope, like, I just rode practice with them, and that was actually the first time I rode my bike. So like, for some stupid reason, I chose the first day of practice, which was absolutely brutal. Like, the climbs are huge, and I think one of the trails was like 14 minutes long. And I was just dying. I was like, what am I doing? Why am I here?
After like 4 months off or whatever. Yeah.
It was literally like my first ride back. So I was just coasting around, like, just helping them out with some lines and stuff, just giving them a bit of feedback. And then it was just so good to be back at the race. Like, even though I wasn't racing, like, it was just good to be back in the environment and just to see everyone again. And like, everyone were real keen to see me as well. So, like 2018, like put quite a big off season in over 2018. It was still tough, obviously. Like, my muscle was just so weak.
Yeah. How did it feel being back in a race environment after, you know, trying to push your body and trying to go fast again after a crash like that?
Yeah, it were interesting. Like, the first one was Chile, like near Santiago. So I think we were racing at like 3,000 meters. So like, and that were a shock to the system straight away. And the conditions, like, it was so dry and dusty and like huge rocks. So yeah, it was kind of interesting to get back. But like, same again, I didn't put any pressure on myself because I knew what I'd done the year before. And
yeah,
I just like went to enjoy myself and just get back into it. And like, Hope quite good that year. They said like, look, there's no pressure on you, just get back to yourself and just like, obviously get back fit and enjoy yourself this year. So like, I did that, and you know, good, like, just enjoy myself at Chile. It was so good. Like, never rode anything like that in my life, so I just loved it. Like, I can't wait to get back there next year. So
sweet. How far through the season then before you started to feel yourself on the bike again?
I actually kind of felt like pretty good straight away. Like, even in Chile, I knew I was riding quite well. I think on like a couple of stages I had like maybe a 30th, like a 28th top 30. It's like, I knew I was riding pretty well anyway, and then I had a couple of mechanicals in the race. Like, I put a pretty big ding in a rear wheel. Like, some of the rocks there, not the rocks what you can see, it's the ones what you can't see, like under the dust.
Yeah.
He's like, what was that? Like, hitting it like a microwave or something. It's so big. So like, I had to pull over like halfway down one of the stages because my wheel had just that trashed. So I had to put a tube in it, rolled a bit further down. Another lad, I think he hit the same rock, and he pulled out the race. So he pumped my tyre up for me, and I just carried on going. Like, every race that I've entered, I've not pulled out of. Like, I always want to finish it for myself and for my sponsors as well.
Yeah.
So like, I carried on going, just literally made my start time at the next race like with seconds. Dropped straight into that one after sprinting up like the next transition. But yeah, like I say, I felt good on the bike and I knew I could ride well. It was just mechanicals at that race.
Yeah.
Like, set me back, but everyone has them, so.
So not too fazed by the injury element of it?
No.
You didn't feel like the risk was more than you were willing to be taking or anything like that?
No, like, I think it's just, because I've done quite a lot in the off-season, obviously, like at home. It's just torrential rain pretty much all winter, so like I knew, and like the conditions in Chile, even though it was the complete opposite, were almost riding similar because it was that loose.
Yeah.
So you kind of almost had to ride like you were riding a wet race. So like I was quite confident, and then going into Colombia, which was the next race, which obviously absolutely poured down there.
Yeah.
Like I absolutely loved it. Like I actually overtook like 3 riders on my first stage. Like, and they were good riders.
Nice.
Like fully sponsored riders, and I think I was like top 20 on that stage. So like, again, like I knew I was riding well, and just it was just like almost starting again, just piecing each race back together and just trying not to make mistakes or mechanicals. And like you say, like I'm still learning now in races, and
yeah,
like from my injury, it's kind of like a fresh start and just building up every race since.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like, seems like it's clicking even more this season. Yeah. 2019's been, on the whole, been treating you pretty well. Yeah, some solid results coming back, especially when you're on a privateer program and doing it all yourself.
Yeah, like I put a really big off season in this year. Obviously, it got quite close to like December, Christmas time, and Hope unfortunately pulled out of like the EWS support. Like, they've got other budgets going elsewhere on bigger projects and stuff. So, so yeah, like I'm a bit gutted, obviously, but like it happens, and it kind of left me on a back foot. And I knew budgets for everyone else, all our teams, would have already been sorted by that point. So yeah. Like, I went to a couple of UK brands, and it looked like we could have got something sorted, but like just over like literally 2 to 3 weeks, and all their budget had tied up. So I literally got to a point I was just like, look, I spoke with my dad, and we just said, look, we'll get everything what we want this year, like all my bike. I'll have a choice on my bike and all the components on it, what I want, what I know that works.
Yeah.
So I went, did quite a lot of testing with like different 29ers. For me, like once I rode my first 29er in Finale, I actually went and did some testing with all in suspension. And like I rode the Specialized Stumpy before it was released. Like, we're doing some testing for the new shock. And like from then, I knew, like, for me, it was a no-brainer. Like, it was pointless for me going to a race on a 650B. Like, it was just pointless for me.
Yeah.
So, like, I knew I was set on a 29er. So, in the off-season, I rode quite a few different 29ers. I felt like the pivot worked the best for me. Like, straight away, when I got on it, I was like, yeah, this bike works well. And, like, I didn't find any limits on it, so I knew I could push hard on it, and it's only going to get better from there. So went and bought a pivot frame through like UK.
Yeah.
Pivot UK. And like they give me a deal on it, but obviously I still had to buy it, although a couple of grand. So bought that. Hope still helped me out with a couple, like to build my bikes. So they give me parts. And then Hunt Wheels come on board. They give me some wheels to test, and I was super happy with them, like absolutely spot on. So yeah, literally just got everything I wanted, and knew I was confident in pretty much everything what I've got this season. So like pretty much just took that one thing like off my mind. I knew I was going to be confident.
Yeah.
Just put a big year in training. Everything's there. Like everything's set in place. And then, like the results started coming soon.
Yeah, and you're doing it all solo, so you're looking after your own bike at the races.
Yeah, so like literally, like I've done a bit of work on like in bike shops before. Like I used to ride on bike shop, which is local to me, so they taught me quite a lot. So like, I can build my own wheels and service my forks and suspension and put my own bearing. Like pretty much do a full rebuild on my bike. So like every race, I service my bike, and like in between like practice and race, I'll go over it, make sure everything's right, and I'll service my forks like every two races or something. So yeah, like it's all off my back this year, but like obviously I'm getting help. Like we're at a world level, so like we do get help, but it's nothing to cover a cost of a EWS season. Yeah, so. Yeah.
What? So roughly, what does a season like that cost? Is, I mean, it's a big chunk of cash, right?
Yeah.
You got to feel for it. You probably don't even want to think about it.
It's not very nice. But I budgeted this year for like 15 grand.
Right.
Like that's a like full budget.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's doing it on the cheap, really. Yeah.
So, like sharing accommodation with all my mates. So like, pretty much this year, it's me, Dan Wolf, Alex Kangas. We've done pretty much every race together, and then Alex, a local, another lad who's kind of local to us, he's jumped on this season as well. So like between us, us four or five of us, like we share accommodation at each race, which keeps the cost down a lot. And then like obviously the travel side of things, you just try and look for cheapish flights what aren't horrendous layovers.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just trying to keep costs down and like and have fun.
Yeah. And do you have to fit work in around it, or have you been able to make that?
Yeah, like luckily for me, like my dad's got his own business, it's quite a niche market. So like we cut like big oil pipes what get laid in the sea. We cut plastic what insulates the welds. Okay. So when these oil pipes getting dropped in sea, they get welded up like on the big ship.
Yeah.
And we cut the plastic what insulates the welds, because the oil is running through the pipes, it's that hot, sometimes it can melt the weld.
Right.
So the plastic that coats the weld, obviously it can't melt through that. So yeah, so yeah, it's pretty niche market.
That is very niche.
it is good, but obviously with all like the prices and stuff, what's gone up, work's kind of gone down for the time being. We've still got work, but like it's not as busy as we used to be. So like whenever my dad gets really busy, I'll give him a hand, but like obviously it benefits us. So I can go out training, come home and then do a couple of hours. Like we work from home as well. We've got some buildings around the back of the house. So
nice. So it's pretty flexible.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's like a couple of hours, like whenever. And
yeah.
So it fits in well. And like, obviously my dad, he's the same. He pretty much does all the work, but like, if the European races, him and my mum will fly out, like, because it's their own business. They can kind of like stop work when they want and stuff, and just he'll get one of his mates to sit in for him or whatever. So, yeah, like work, we do work, but like for me, it's limited.
Right, so, oh, that's
like,
cool,
enough to pay the bills, but
yeah,
like it's a budget for this year anyway, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So, like I say, you've been having a good season and you're sitting in the mix of a good chunk of riders that are all getting paid to do it. And it's kind of contract time of the season.
Yeah.
What as a rider, like, how do you deal with that? What do you think you have to do to kind of get to that point where a team will take you on board?
It's tough, really. Like, we've always struggled with it for some reason. Like even when we used to race Downhill, like we'd be like national champions as well as like the series champions, and we'd go to sponsors saying these are our results, like this is what we're doing, this is what we're like our following and stuff, and like people they give you a product and stuff, but they'd never give you any money.
Right.
It's almost like obviously the bike world's some people struggle, but there's a lot of money in the bike world.
Yeah.
And like, a lot of people say, like, budgets are stretched and tight and stuff, but, like, if you go out on, like, photo shoot days and stuff with some companies, like, they just, like, splash cash like it's coming out their ears.
Right.
It's like, freaking hell. Like, could have saved that and give it to me. But yeah, it's tough. Like, I think, like, especially now, with how it's going, like, it's absolutely huge now, so there's definitely budgets there to be on teams.
Yeah.
And it shows, like, with everyone who's around me at the moment, they're all getting paid to ride. So, like, I think, unfortunately, a lot of it's going social media way. So, like, it's completely different to what I'm actually used to and come from.
Right.
Like, I've always been that full-on racer, and that's all I've known, really.
Uh-huh.
So, I kind of, past few years, I've just built my social media up, and it's starting to look like quite kind of positive outside of things. But And a lot of it's who you know, like sponsorship now, like back in the day, you could kind of just be like, I need some results, and a lot of people just like, yeah, that will give you a frame deal and stuff. But nowadays it's pretty tight, and like, it's tough to get like just even just free bikes. Like,
yeah.
Like I say, I've had to pay for my bike this year. It's not ideal, but obviously, like, it was late on and budgets were stretched then, but it's not easy. So, but yeah, like I say, I've been chatting to a few people, like, at the EWS, and obviously, like, Hunt and, like, their sister brand Privateer Bikes have just come out with a bike, what I'm developing at the moment. So, like, there's obviously things there for next year, and I think I've done enough this year to prove that I'm a consistent, like, top 20, if not, like, without the mechanicals or a little crash, I could quite easily be in the top 10 as well. So,
yeah.
I've consistently been up there. I haven't dropped out of the top 20 overall rankings all year. So, it's definitely something there. It's just chatting to the right people, getting the right contacts. And, it's, like you said, it's contract. It's a big contract year. Like, a lot of contracts are up, especially in the males.
Okay.
For the EWS. So, it's kind of everyone's up in the air at the moment. No one really knows what's going on. But these next couple of weeks are quite busy for everyone, and yeah, it's just see what comes up. Like, obviously, be nice to be on a full factory team, but like, there's benefits of both. Like, when you're on a full team, like, you're almost tied into like, team dinners, team meetings, and everything like what it comes with it,
yeah.
I suppose. But like, being like a privateer, like, you got your own freedom, you can kind of do what you want. So there's benefits of both. So
having someone to sort your bike out while
allow
you to rest would probably be a good thing. But
yeah, like the main thing for me, like being on a team, is like the when you're actually at a race and like you've got a tech zone midway through the race.
Yeah.
Obviously, like the pro riders come in, they literally just jump off the bike, sit down, refuel. Get like they've got food ready waiting for them, drinks are all med up waiting, and like if it's a wet race, obviously the mechanic will wash the bike, lube it all up, check it all over, change tyres or an air shock depending what stages are coming up.
Yeah.
So like they have all that, whereas like we come to a tech zone and like you literally, obviously first thing first, you got to check your bike over. If you got adding mechanicals, you got to fix them, make sure it's all right. You don't have time to clean your bike because you've got to refuel yourself. So, like, your bottom line is just make sure your bike's running as good as it can be, and then chuck some food down your throat and refuel you with your water and like on your way. So, like, it's tough for sure. Like, it is brutal, but like I said, there's benefits of both.
Yeah.
Obviously, the benefits of being on a pro team definitely outweigh the benefits on a privateer circuit, but. I think a lot of people put a lot more pressure on themselves when they're on a team. Obviously, like they've got contracts and stuff, and they don't want to let team managers and other people down. So I think there is a lot of pressure that side of things. But
do you feel pressure this time in the season? Like you say, you know, it's contract time. Like now's a good time to get a good result. Does that play on your mind, or do you just kind of crack on with what you're doing?
No, I know what I can do. I know I'm more than capable of being top 10, if not top 5, without any mechanicals or like a crash on like whatever stage. It's I know without a doubt that I can be up there. So if I'm riding like happy and having fun, like without a doubt I'll be up there. It's like if you don't have the mechanicals as such, but so all this year I've pretty much just tried to have fun and made the most of what we've got, and like it's obviously worked out for me. And like you say, like it's that time of year for contracts and stuff, but like I think I'm not like I've done enough, but like I know I'm like consistently one of the, like I'm up there. So
yeah, you've shown what you're capable of. And
like I know if I get like that factory support, or if I have like not factory support, but if I've got someone paying me a wage and paying me to get round and I kind of still do my own thing, then I can put my money into different things, like get a full nutrition program, and like I can give my trainer some money so he can come over to me like a couple of times a week to train me, and like there's benefits from it all. So like I know if I do get on either a fracture ride or I'm getting paid at least something, like it's only going to give me a better opportunity.
So. Yeah. And do you think there's more to come kind of in the injury recovery side of things? Do you think you've got, with another off season under your belt, do you think that'll be an improvement as well?
Yeah, for sure. Like I know what I'm struggling on like this year. Like obviously my left leg's still nowhere near as strong as my right leg. So like just constantly building that up. Like the doctor said when I first did it, it's going to be 3 to 4 years until you get somewhere about 100% with it. So like hopefully next year it'll be like somewhere near to my right leg. So that's only going to give me benefits as well. And just from the races this year and last year, I know what I need to work on. Like just a bit more explosive power and like on real like chundery rock flat stuff.
Right.
Just like powering through like the gears and just like pretty much just explosive power is pretty much what I just want to work on this season. Like I know I'm fit enough like on pretty much every stage, like the very long stages. So the longest stage in Canazé in Italy, that I think that were like 13 minutes or something, 10 to 13 minutes, and I were 8th on that stage, and they had like a bit of a mistake on there. Top of the world, like 20 minute stage.
Yeah.
I think I were maybe 14th or something on there. And I see myself, and I know I'm like very mentally strong. Like I know I can push myself like past what most can. Like especially like I said earlier, North Star, like the last round, quite a lot of riders were talking about stage one. Like it was probably the most physical one, and they said they had to like sit down halfway down because it was so brutal. So like, oh, this must be like a bad stage. It must be so physical. So like, I got halfway down and sat down, and like pedaling away, like, still like charging, but like just trying to conserve energy. I got to the bottom, and I was so fresh, and I was just like, oh, like I could have gone like just like full 110% all the way down. So from there, I just pushed like myself so hard, like from what I've done every other race, and like it seemed to work. So like I know I'm very mentally strong. And
when you say mentally strong, you mean you can like extract all of your performance? You can dig deep.
Yeah. So like just like you said, just digging deep, and like when you think you're giving 100%, there's always like 30-40% more to give. Like you're not going hard until you can like taste blood, or like you're pretty much throwing up in your helmet.
Yeah.
Like that's why it's got to that level now. Like quite a few of my mates, like Dan and that, who race EWS with us, like they say like, oh, are you gonna like try and conserve energy on like top of the world stage? Like it's so long. Like it's literally like 20 minutes you're just like battering down like rough stuff, or you're on a fire road and you're sprinting, so it's not much let up. But like the level nowadays, like if you're conserving energy or like just holding back at a certain point, the top riders are going that 100% all the way down, so you're losing time. So I literally just say, look, if you're holding back, like you're losing like seconds, like like that. So like you just got to dig deep and know your limits.
Yeah, your brain naturally holds some back, doesn't it? Like protects the body a bit.
Yeah. And I think that's why having a good PT and like just training in the gym, like when you're digging deep, like we do quite a lot of CrossFit and stuff, and like just some like circuits, like your Tabata circuits and stuff, like you're literally just dying. Like you just feel like you can't give anything else, and you've got like 50 burpees to go, and you're just like, oh my God. But then like he's like your PT's shouting at you, and you literally just blow through like the last 20 burpees like it's nothing. And you're like, you're just like, if I can give that bit extra when I thought I can give up, then you can give that extra whilst you're racing. So.
Yeah. Do you, in the gym, do you think you could give that without having someone there shouting at you? Or does it, is that a big part of it?
You say you can. Like, you'd like to say you can, but it does help. You always try and go 110%, like, in all my training. Like, when I'm doing my circuits, my CrossFit circuits, Tabata circuits and stuff, I do go 110%. Like, I literally can't stand up when I finish. Like, I've just got to lie down and, like, get my breath back. But, like, obviously, when you're training with your PT or if you're training with even just a friend, like, it's almost like a competition. Like, I even, like, beat my PT quite a lot of things. So I'm just like, I'm going hard here. But, like, I think it's good. Like, it definitely benefits if you're training with someone or, like, if you can get a PT, like, because it just pushes that a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Cool. We're getting towards the end of our time, but we'll wrap up with our four regular questions. First one of those, if our listeners had £150 to spend to improve their performance on a bike, where would they go spend that money?
£150 don't get you much, unfortunately, in the bike industry. Matt. But I'm not sure. A lot of the bikes nowadays are, like, even your budget bikes are very good. So, like, for me, it'd either be, if you're into the racing, then it'd either be get, like, your bike set up or, like, a bike coaching.
Yeah.
Something similar along those lines, or like a couple of PT sessions just to get you to know what to train and what's going to benefit you.
Yeah. Someone to shout at you and show you where that extra 20% is.
Put you through some pain.
Yeah.
Won't be the best and the most pleasant when you're 50 quid you've spent, but it'll benefit you for sure.
Yeah.
Either one of them two, or like another thing what's like pretty valuable is your point of contacts on your bike. So your tyres, pedals, shoes, grips, handlebars and gloves as such.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, just along them lines.
Tyres then, what are you running? What's your favourite?
I've run Michelin Wild Enduros pretty much everywhere. It's quite an aggressive tyre, but like they seem to work on everything. Unfortunately, I've only managed, like, it's relatively new, so I've only managed to get the Enduro carcass, but the one thing what's changed in North Star is I've got my hands on some used prototype ones, and my God, what a world of difference.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the Wild Enduros, like the Enduro ones what I've used like all year, like obviously they've worked well enough for me, but then I got on these and I was like, wow. So like,
what's different then, and what have they changed? You know,
the compounds like a lot sticky. It's almost like chewing gum. Like,
right.
It's so grippy, and then the like sidewalls and the whole carcass of the tyres a lot stiff. It's pretty much like a downhill tyre, but like a really sticky one.
Okay.
And yeah, like once they come out, I'd get a set of them for yourself.
Excellent.
You won't be disappointed.
Happy days. And what about grips? You got a favourite?
Yeah, I don't like riding gloves.
Okay.
So like, I'm a gloveless guy. It's like a thicker grip for me because I don't ride. That is a bit less material without gloves. So a thicker grip for me. I just go and buy Dieter grips. It's quite a nice profile and it's quite soft. So for the longest, very long stages, having a soft grip is very pleasant on the hands.
Yeah, so it gives you a bit of relief, I guess. Yeah.
So, yeah, cool. They're a nice group.
Nice, good stuff. All right, question two. If you could wind back the clock and have a sit down with yourself age 16, which is when you just started riding, what advice would you give him?
To get on my bike as soon as possible. obviously I just started riding then, so I think just I'd have told myself to put the work in, like, from straight away. Like, when I raced down, I didn't really do much. We just trained in the gym. And actually, I'd probably have made the move sooner to Enduro.
Right.
Like, when Mark Scott stopped downhill and moved straight to Enduro, like, I think he made the right move there, and it's worked for him. Like, he's always been up there. So, and like, if I'd have made the move sooner, I'd have learnt a lot more straight away, and like, I'd have put a lot more work in. So I think we'd have been up there, like,
yeah, a bit sooner. So, yeah,
but yeah, like, and I enjoy it a lot more. There's a lot more bike time and riding, and every round's different.
Yeah,
like, we go to every year is something new. So,
and insane tracks as well.
Oh yeah, like the track, literally, like I said to you earlier, North Star. I've never rode anything so severe in my life. Like, the conditions, like, dry and dusty, but the rock gardens, like, even on down a World Cup circuit, never rode a rock garden. Every track had a rock garden, what was worse than anything I've rode.
And you've ridden some gnarly downhill tracks, right? Yeah, including Val de Sol.
Yeah, but I think Val de Sol's still going to be one of the hardest race runs you'll ever do, just because of the rocks, what you can't see.
Yeah.
But, like, the actual rock gardens, what we're at North Star, you've never seen anything like it in your life. It was scary coming into some of them. Like, it was brutal.
Yeah, claimed a few people as well.
Yeah, bikes and bodies were everywhere.
Yeah, fair play. All right, question three. If you could have a day's coaching with anyone past or present, who would you choose and what would you want to learn from them?
That's a good one. I'm not sure, like,
you can have more than one if you want.
Yeah, I've always rode, like, motocross and, like, hard enduro. And luckily for me, like, around me, there's, like, Paul Bolton, like, Billy Bolt's not far, Jarvis, he's quite close, and Jarvis's mechanic, I actually ride with him quite a lot, so, like, we do a lot of training on that side of thing. But I've always been into motocross and watched motocross from a young age, so I think I'd go with a motocross boys, like Alden Baker or someone, or, like, even if, like, you could go on like, a ride day with, like, Roxon or someone who's real humble and obviously puts all the work in. They work really hard, so
I think they're super fit athletes, aren't they?
Yeah, so I think something along them lines.
Yeah,
but also, like, there's a lot of people in, like, the bike world who I'd like to learn a few things off, like, especially on the downhill side, like Greg Minar and Pete. Even in the enduro, like Martin Mays puts a lot of work in. Like, he's so lean, it's mental. So yeah, it's like you could rhyme off so many, but if I had one choice, it'd be like a motocross,
one of the top motocross lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, fair play. And then we've got our fairly new question: what is something that you do every day that you feel benefits you?
Oh, tough one. Not sure. I think just having fun. If I'm having fun, I know I'm at the best I'll be. So, like, whether it's I'm out with a girlfriend or family or my mates, or I'm just out having fun on my bike by myself, like, I think that benefits me or anyone in such or who's in my company. Like, I think it benefits me especially. So, just having fun and being myself, really. So,
keeping a smile on your face.
Yeah, like, obviously, if you're happy, things tend to go well, so just having fun in general.
Nice one. All right, good stuff. Well, if people want to kind of follow your progress, where's the best place for them to find you?
Obviously, social media is the biggest thing at the moment, so my Instagram, Matts.Hard46.
Cool, we'll stick a link in the show notes as well.
And I've also got a Facebook page, which is Matts.Hard Racing, so
they're
the main things. And then, like, I also upload a couple of videos recently, like, to YouTube, just GoPros are, like, my favourite stages from BWSs or just general riding. So.
Cool. All right. You'll have to send me a link to that, and I'll put that in the show notes as well, so people can go and have a look.
Yeah. Nice. They're the ones.
Cool. Happy days. Well, thanks a lot for the ride, and thanks for the chat.
Oh, thank you for having me. Nice to meet you. Pleasure.
Wicked. Well, best of luck for what's left of the season, and then hopefully some off-season good stuff happens and we see you on a big team next year.
Yeah, hopefully. Fingers are crossed, so we'll see you soon.
Awesome. Cheers, Matt.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
All right, that's it for our chat with Matt Stuttard. I hope you enjoyed listening. A massive thanks to Precision Hydration for supporting the podcast. Head to precisionhydration.com to learn more about your specific hydration needs and for your free hydration plan. To get 20% off all Precision Hydration products, just use the code DOWNTIME, all in capitals, at the checkout. You'll find the links you need in the show notes over on downtimepodcast.com. If you've got a couple of minutes, then leave us a review wherever it is that you listen to the show. Give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to help support the podcast and get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon. But until then, get out and ride.